Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have part two of our interview with Mario Nieves. Last week, we talked to Mario about his bodybuilding career, how he got started in bodybuilding and training with Sergio Oliva. Today, we're going to continue that discussion, where Mario is going to talk a little bit more about his training and his decision to stay drug-free throughout most of his bodybuilding career. And also, we're going to talk to Mario about his motorcycle club that he has had this for like the last 30 years or so. And he has traveled all over the world, not only in the United States, but all over Central America, South America. So it's really an amazing club that he has, and he's doing some unbelievable traveling. And we'll also talk to Mario about his movie career. He starred in a few action movies that were made in Chicago in the late 1980s, including Code of Silence, which was Chuck Norris's best movie, probably, and also Steven Seagal's first movie, Above the Law. So we'll talk to Mario about all that stuff coming up in a minute. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, so I had my hernia surgery last Wednesday, so I've been recuperating from that. It was a lot more extensive than I thought it would be. They put a mesh in this time. If you remember last year, I had the same hernia surgery done, and the doctor just made an incision and he tried to stitch it up, but that didn't hold, and the hernia came back quickly. So this time they went in, and this time they put a mesh in. So I didn't realize how painful it would be. I thought it would kind of be like last year, where it was not painful at all. In fact, I don't even think I took any pain pills last year because I felt fine the day after the surgery. But this was much, much worse. And it was very, very tender, very sore. And I was basically on the couch for like 3 or 4 days doing nothing but taking pain pills, watching TV, and sleeping. So now it's feeling a little bit better. It's still pretty tender, but I am able to move around a little bit. I cannot go to the gym for 6 weeks. So I won't be back into the gym until 2021, till the new year. But I feel like I really need it this time. I need to take the time off and just let this thing heal. And hopefully the mesh will do its job and hold that hernia in, and I will be done with this thing. So I'm glad that's over with. The big news last week, which I'm sure all of you have heard by now, is that the Mr. Olympia is being moved from Las Vegas to Orlando, Florida. So I have been hearing rumors for about a month or maybe even 2 months that the Olympia was going to be moved to Orlando. But when they went ahead with plans to have it in Vegas, they were going to have it at the Planet Hollywood at a brand new location. And the theater there is really, really beautiful. But Dan Solomon, who has been running the Olympia now for his second year, this is his second year doing it, Dan decided to move it to Florida because Nevada has just brought in some new restrictions because of the rise in the COVID cases going up. So I think they would have only been able to hold like 250 people in the theater. And they didn't want to do that because this is going to be a really great Mr. Olympia. Phil Heath may make a record by winning his 8th Mr. Olympia. And it is going to be a huge contest. It's going to be some great competition. So they did not want to do that. Dan is a big sports fan, and he saw that the World Series took place this year and the NBA championships took place. So why not have the Mr. Olympia take place? You know, they didn't want to cancel it. So he scrambled and found a new venue. So credit to Dan Solomon and to Jake Wood, who now owns Mr. Olympia. And they found a new home for it. So it's going to be at the Orlando Convention Center in Orlando, Florida, on the same dates. So it'll be the weekend of December 18th and 19th. So I already have my hotel room. I am going to go out there. Dan said he would set me up with a press pass. So I'm going to try and go out there and do some interviews and put those up on YouTube and get some coverage. It should be really exciting. I'm really happy being here in Florida because all the contests are coming to Florida this year because we are pretty much wide open. Our governor here doesn't believe in restricting things. He shut things down for a while, I think in like March, April. But now he has everything opened up and he's not going to go back. So thank God for Governor DeSantis from Florida. We have a great governor out here. So anyways, it is set for Orlando, Florida. So I don't have to get on a flight. I just drive over there and spend the weekend out there. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So that is some big news. So I talked to Dan and maybe we can get him on the show so he can explain it a little bit better than I did. And hopefully we can do that next week, but we'll see. I know he's very, very busy because they've only got less than four weeks left now to get this thing done and get all the preparations done. And there is a lot of stuff to get done. So I understand if he can't come on, but hopefully he'll be able to come on. All right. We did get some emails last week. If you guys want to email me about the show, my email address is naturalolympia@gmail.com. If you have any comments about any of our shows that we do, I love reading your comments. If you have any suggestions about any other guests you'd like to see on or anything, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I did get an email from Mr. Jim Kerr. Jim is one of our Patreon donors, so I appreciate Jim every month for contributing to the show. If you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon donor, you can just go to thebodybuildinglegendshow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon donors. So Jim has been one of our longtime Patreon donors, so I appreciate him. Jim said, "Hey, John, great job with the Mario Nevis interview. I can't wait for part two. Other than Sergio, Mario was the top bodybuilder in Chicago in the late 70s and had a very great balanced physique. Keep up the excellent work." All right. Thank you, Jim. And I also posted the Mario Nevis interview on my YouTube page, which is under my name, John Hansen. And I got some comments from that as well. Louise Gomez said, "Wow, from my hometown, Chicago, I remembered his two gyms." David Norton said, "Great video, John. Please hurry up and put the other part out. Sorry if I sound impatient, but you got some of the best content out there. God bless you, matey. That's what we say here in England. Ha ha." Boxer Fencer said, "I really enjoyed this part one." Lone Mapper said, "This guy's positive attitude is off the charts. Thoroughly enjoyed this. I can't wait for part two." Angel Oliva said, "Wow, great interview with Mr. Nevis. I remember him from Iron Man magazine. Great symmetry and always ripped to shreds. I can't wait for part two. Thank you, Mr. Hansen. I hope that you can ask him about what he thought about the 72 Olympia." Yeah, I think Mario talks about the 72 Olympia actually in this interview. So you'll hear that in a second. Philip said, "First class, thanks." Louise Gomez said, "I truly enjoyed your videos, especially old school bodybuilding. I love hearing about how they first started working out. I always wondered how Mario first took off. I'm looking forward to your part two interview, especially how he got into movies like Code of Silence and Above the Law, Chicago-made movies. He had a cameo on The Color of Money." Odessa File said, "I remember Mario from the 70s. I thought he had great symmetry and proportions with a lot of thickness with a lean, pleasing physique. His remarks about Steve Reeves reminded me about the first time I saw the old Hercules movies. While Reeves did not have the mass of Sergio and Arnold, he looked incredible." Starforce said, "I need help researching a bodybuilder from the 50s, but he didn't say who. Xavier said, "Parale loco, waiting for part two." I don't speak Spanish. I don't know what that means. A UK Home Gym said, "Always great and most realistic stories. This guy's story really hit me in my heart. I was born in a farm in East Europe, serving in the army 18 months, 546 days. Moving to London, I won many championships in my country and here in the UK. And after me, my younger brother too, including the IFBB European Championship. Best channel on here." All right, thank you. Yeah, that sounds just like Mario's story. So thank you for your comments, guys. And if you're on YouTube, also check out this week RX Muscle, Last week, I did an interview with Dave Palumbo about the career of Lee Haney. So we've never talked about Lee Haney in all my interviews with Dave Palumbo, where we talk about old school bodybuilding. So we talked about his whole career from winning the Teenage Mr. America in 1979 all the way up to winning 8 Mr. Olympia titles. And I just saw some pictures of Lee over the weekend at the NPC Nationals, which was also held in Orlando, Florida. And Lee is looking great. He just celebrated his 61st birthday last week on November 11th. He is very healthy, very happy, and a great inspiration to all of us. One of the best bodybuilders ever. Lee is doing good. So check out that interview that I did with Dave Palumbo on rxmuscle.com. And hopefully I will have another bodybuilding history episode up on my YouTube page this week. This one I'm going to talk about the 1968 Mr. Olympia. I've been really busy the last couple months. I haven't had one up in a while. So I've got it filmed. I just have to edit it, and hopefully I'll get it up this week. Since I'm not going to be going to the gym, I've got all this extra time. Oh, and also I want to wish happy birthday to Mike Quinn. Mike celebrated his birthday last week on November 18th and texted Mike and wished him happy birthday. And I guess he's going through some hard times. Mike's been going through some hard times for the last couple of years. A lot of surgeries, a lot of back problems. And did not know this, but Mike's longtime girlfriend passed away this summer, I guess, from a drug overdose. So very sorry to hear that. I had no idea. I think they had broken up recently, but they were together, I think, about 10 years. So I was very, very sorry to hear that from Mike. I know he's got to be going through a lot of depression with that. So unfortunately, that is a story with Mike, but hopefully things will get better for him. He was a great champion, and I always enjoyed looking at him. At his career when he was competing, I thought he was a really exciting bodybuilder. He gave some great interviews, and I always looked up to his physique too. He was a big inspiration for me. So hopefully things will get better for Mike Quinn. All right, so that is all I got, guys, for our opening. So here's our interview with Mr. Mario Nieves, part 2, where we talk more about his bodybuilding career and also about his movie career. Here we go.
I can't remember too many people. I remember,
like you said, Norman Zell used to bring guys in to guest pose, and there was guys coming through Chicago, right?
Yeah. I remember I spent my whole life working. I used to work construction. So I used to go to work and go to the YMCA after work.
Right, right. Yeah. So when you were gaining that weight, Mario, you said you cut back on your extra activities and stuff. Do you think it was the training that was the most important, or was it the diet? Because we didn't know as much about diet, I think, back then as we do now.
Well, I was always sharp with food.
Okay.
Nutrition, I learned to take, because I trained to extremes, especially when I started cutting up, I trained extremely hard. But for weight gains, you don't have to take as many vitamins as you would when you're on a diet because you're eating a lot of food. Right. I used to eat a little box, I think it's called, of ice cream, or a thing, that was my snack, or a thing of cottage cheese because it has protein and all that. I ate a lot of meat, always ate a lot of meat. Sometimes when you look at it, I probably ate to gain like some people diet, but I don't have a problem dieting whatsoever. And so I tended to not get fat. I remember a kid that competed with me in the USA, but I don't remember his name. He came to the gym once going through the city, and he came to visit me. He says, "Holy smokes, you look like that now?" And I said, "Yeah, this is how I look. How else am I supposed to look?" He said, "No, I'm bulky." And he was right. He was real bulky. I've never been like really bulky until I really went to the extremes and trying to gain that weight. And I got up to about 220, but I did not like that heavy weight.
Okay. Yeah.
My fighting weight is about 190, 192. I can run. I can do almost anything, jump high. Not anymore because I'm an older man now. But back then, yes, I could do a lot of stuff at in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You said I didn't know you were like natural all those years, you know, because I imagine back then, pretty much everybody was using them, right? Even in the gym.
Well, the problem was, in all honesty, that I was at the Division Street Y, where there was no drug movement because there was no bodybuilding. And we were all like busting our butts and not knowing. We were, me and my little brother, my other brother, we were like ignorant or innocent of all of that because we were in a ghetto gym. Yeah. Obviously, years later, that changed. But by that time, our frame of mind also had gotten even stronger because I had seen a lot of damage done to people. I did try the chemicals after the Junior America. I quit to open my gym in 79.
Okay.
And I built my own equipment. Took me a year and a half. And then I opened the gym. And then I met another fellow. And he explained to me, oh, I know how. Because in 1984, I went to the Mr. America in California.
Yeah.
And I got really ready for it. I was cut as you can get. But you know what? The guys that were there that I had seen 4 years earlier, they were huge. I was like a little kid.
Yeah.
And my brother even told me, my God. So then there was a guy that beat me who had a body similar to mine. And I really believe I was more cut than him because I like to be observant, you know. And and I realized maybe the chemicals do more than just – maybe the chemicals masculinize you. Not only give you the body size, but masculinize you, because I was a lot more cut than he was, but he appeared more cut than me.
Yeah.
You understand? And I was ripped. If anything I had, I was ripped. But I didn't stand a chance. I didn't place in the top 10.
Yeah.
You know, so after that, I had to think about it and say, well, I'm either going to have to – try it or I'm going to have to quit. So I decided I'd try it with some fellows that knew quite a bit about it. And it was just a big mistake because I did not like it. I did not like the way it made me look. I did not like feeling like an oaf. And maybe that was my feeling because I had been in sports. Maybe someone else won't feel that way. But I finally just got out of the whole thing.
Okay. So all those other shows you did in the 70s when you were up against Tony Pearson and did winning the Junior America, you were clean and all that stuff,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing, Mario. I didn't know that.
The year that I won the Junior America, a month later, I ran 10 miles in 1 hour.
Really? Like
a month later.
Wow.
Some guys bet me that I couldn't run, so they bet me $125 that I couldn't run. So I went to a track, and they counted the laps, and I got 100. I won 120. I said, you know, I don't bet. I don't ever bet. So I'm not a betting man. But if you really want me to do it, it's going to cost you because – this is not a bet. I'm going to take your money. It's not even a bet. They laughed. So I did the 10. I did 80 laps, and I did the last two laps in reverse. Wow. And they couldn't believe it. Wow. I said, I told you I'm going to take your money. So when I won the Junior A, I was in good physical shape, really good physical shape. And how I trained was a three-hour nonstop routine. So that about 20 minutes into my workout, my lungs wanted to burst. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter if I was doing chest or whatever. I would do rep after rep after rep, superset, tri-sets, minimal supersets, quad sets, and I would do nonstop routine, and my lungs were always going, going, going. My heart was going. So when I got down to like the Junior A and the Junior USA and all that, physically, I was in incredible shape, physically.
Yeah, wow. What year was your first show?
Oh, my first show had to be 1969. My first show, because I started just out of high school. I got out of school in 68.
Okay.
And in 69, when I was at the YMCA, it could have been late 68 or 69. They had two tournaments that I won. It's intramural, like the YMCA thing itself. But I always believed in them. And I also promoted them years later for the guys coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Because those little things give you inspiration to move on.
Yeah. Yeah.
My first contest then was I came home in March of 71 from Vietnam, and in June I was already competing.
Okay.
Very lean. I was placing third, fourth, second contest, but I was always lean. At that time I was about 169, 170.
Okay.
I won the city wrestling champion at 154 pounds.
Okay. In high school.
And then after I left the weights for a while, I took up Taekwondo at 42 years of age because I got my two sons involved. When one was little and the other one was a teenager. And I got involved just because of them, and I won the Illinois and Wisconsin State Championship also.
Did you really? Wow, no kidding. Yeah.
Yep. I like that sport. I believe that sport is really good for young people.
Uh-huh.
Sports, you know, I saw adults, parents make a lot of mistakes trying to force their kids to be champions. You cannot do that.
Right.
What I find is it's better to take them to the sport, let them enjoy it.
Yeah.
They will decide if they want to be champions, but at least let them enjoy it.
Right.
Don't put them down because they lose. Support them, make them feel good, and then they'll enjoy the sport, and some will be good, and some will just quit regardless, but you gave them the opportunity.
Yeah.
And they ruin a lot of kids trying to force them to be champions. Nobody could have made me do the things that I did. I actually motivated myself, but if you had forced me to do it, I'd tell you you're a slave driver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the shows in the early 70s. What were the bodybuilding shows like?
Well, first of all, the shows – except the ones that were thrown by people that were not involved in the AAU, because shows were all AAU.
Yeah.
Or either after a powerlifting tournament or after a weightlifting tournament.
Okay, period. That's what I heard.
There was no other. There was no
right.
other.
Right.
And a lot of times the weightlifting tournament took till 11 at night, 12 at night, and then the bodybuilding tournament was an afterthought.
Right, right. That's what I heard.
I spent many times in YMCAs with that. There was a guy, you may know about him. His name was Dr. Lyle Schwartz from Northwestern University. He was a powerlifter.
Okay.
And he was on the AAU committee. And it was through him that we divided him and a few other guys that were smart that we divided the three sports of bodybuilding, weight training, powerlifting, and Olympic lifting.
Yeah.
I like them all regardless. I like them all. But mine was bodybuilding. I competed in a few powerlifting tournaments because normally you get strong. But I also realized that if I'm going to stay in powerlifting, I'm not going to get the bodybuilding advantage that I want. So I had to drop powerlifting and continue with the reps and stuff. Lyle Schwartz helped with a few others to divide the three sports. They thought that bodybuilding was not going to get anywhere. I told them, look, it will become something really good. We just have to have it so people can come and see it. And that's how it worked out. It became the most popular of the three.
Wow. What year was
also, that? I really don't remember. I'd have to look, but that had to be in the 74s, something like that.
Mid-70s,
because it didn't all end at once. They allowed some to do it, and then little by little they separated. So it started out as a couple of possibilities, and when they worked, eventually they just separated completely and created different committees for different sports, which was good for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no posing with music.
Right.
And I remember that I posed with music several times. And they did an interview on me. I said, look, I believe that posing with music is the thing of the future. Someday, people are going to come and compete. They're going to bring their own music. They're going to do a routine to music because I foresee that as an incredible thing. And this was like maybe 73.
Wow. No kidding.
I had also heard Frank Zane had done the same thing. Back then, we didn't use video, so I never saw a video of it. But I heard he'd done it. And I think one other guy also did it, but I never got to see them. But I know I was the one in the Midwest that did it. And I remember a gym on the far south side invited me to guest pose in an app. They had invited somebody to guest pose in a tournament. At the last minute, the guy dropped out.
Okay.
So they called me to see if I could save the day in a week. And I said, yeah, I'll be there. And I did the guest posing to the music, and it really brought the house down.
Wow, no kidding.
Brought the house down. They really liked it. And I'm so glad that years later, you know, you don't pose without music.
Yeah, yeah. What music did you use? Do you remember?
One of them was Barry White, and it's a instrumental by Barry White.
Okay.
I can't remember it offhand, but I used like two or three. I just don't remember them all because, remember, I've been away from that, so I'd have to sit, and a lot of that will come back to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what was the first big show that you won, the state-level show?
I won the Mr. Illinois in 1972.
72, okay. So that's when you were kind of making your mark and people were noticing you then.
I won the Mr. Wisconsin somewhere around the Wisconsin Open, Mr. Wisconsin Open.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an open tournament. I know that Hank Zarco was there. He had won his class in the IFBB Mr. America.
Yeah, I remember that name.
And he was a guy to reckon with, but I beat him and I won my class and the overall.
Okay. What was the first national level show you did?
Well, I did compete in the YMCA Mr. America, where I was out of shape then, and I placed in the top three, second or third. That was in 75. I definitely did not get in shape for that. I wasn't ready to get in shape till 77.
Okay.
I also won Mr. Midwest in 75. I used to compete like a lot of times in a year. Whatever was open, I just go in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I won Mr. Midwest. I won Mr. Western Illinois Macomb. I won a lot of stuff. Then I remember that the Mr. YMCA, Mr. America, I think it was, they held that at Norm Zales YMCA, Leaning Tower Y, and yeah. I placed it. I did not win it, but I was on my way. I figured if I can place in this out of shape, I know that when I get in shape, I'll be okay.
Yeah. You know,
so that was my line of reasoning. Let's see. I went to Missouri for a Midwestern event, but I can't remember the name, but it was like a Midwest event. And I remember another famous bodybuilder I spoke with, he was the redheaded guy with the freckles.
Ken Waller?
That's him.
Yeah.
And he says, Mario, why would you come here out of shape? And I had a laugh because he was right. But I think they didn't understand that I wasn't ready to really get in shape yet.
Yeah.
You know, so I went. And then when I finally got in shape, I got in shape after 77. I got in shape every year. I got in shape for the next contest and the next contest. And I did really well, but I did not win. And I believe that, in all honesty, I was in the best shape at the junior A. Because it was my first time. I gave it all I had. I was 192. I went to the Mr. USA, and I was 197 pounds. I believe I won my class. I won my class, but I did not win the overall. There were times, and I must admit, without naming names, where I saw a guy play, say, second or third, that I would say, now, I would have his body, but I would not take the winner's body. Mm. And I remember I went to a national where I took third. And everybody came up to talk to me. My God, you look fantastic. I like the way you look. So what about the widow? Oh, no, no, we don't want to look like that. Hmm. And unfortunately, he did not know anything about symmetry. It looks like a guy that took a lot of chemicals and just grew, and that's it. And yeah. I can only explain it like this. It looked like somebody put a skeleton on the wall and just threw body parts and muscles at it, and wherever they fell, they fell.
Right.
You know, incomplete biceps, like half a bicep, real high triceps, stuff that you when you're a sculptor, you know how to bring those triceps down low. You know how to extend the bicep by doing the correct, but you know how to make the chest come from here all the way back and not just a little piece over here.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. I saw a lot of wrongdoing, but, you know, I don't criticize people because each one of them is proud of their own little handiwork, but somebody's going to be a champion.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I'm going to have an ugly body, I'll take third place and keep mine.
Right, exactly. I agree with that. So 77, that was really the big year then, right? That was the year that the Junior America, well, that was your first big year.
That was my big year for me because my goal was to win the Mr. America, and I never got to it because I ended up leaving in 79, working on building my gym equipment. I opened the gym in 82. I opened the gym. And then opening a gym is not like people think. It's a lot of work. And then all of a sudden, a customer walks in, there goes your workout. And I'm the kind of guy, I cannot talk when I train.
Yeah.
I don't listen to the phone when I train. I don't keep a gallon of milk or stuff around me when I train. I used to train very fast, very hard. I couldn't put nothing in my stomach when I train or I'll throw it up.
Mm-hmm.
And my training partners trained with me because they were like me. We had a lot in common. We would work out. And when we were done, then we talk.
Yeah.
But when you own a gym and you got a customer coming in, you got to stop and say, hi, how are you? Can I help you? And sign them up and stuff. And I wasn't a rich guy, so I didn't have a lot of people working for me. So a lot of times it would impede my own workouts.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
In 77 was a good year for two reasons. I had always liked motorcycles. Motorcycle was my hobby away from hard work and bodybuilding. I love to go out and take a free ride out to the boonies and enjoy myself. And I built a really beautiful chopper that I came out with in 77. And a month after I won the Junior America, I started the Latin American Motorcycle Association, which was just a little club for Chicago, just a club along our lines of how people back home respect the club. And never imagined that it will grow to what it did. And years later, it has become an incredible organization with so many chapters. And not only that, it also picked up a mission, which is to bring people together. We don't discriminate against Muslims, Christians, Buddhists. We have people of all religions. We have people of all colors, all nationalities, because our goal is to, if we can sit at a table, a Jew, a Muslim, a Christian, and an atheist, and respect each other and like each other, we can do a lot more for society than hating each other.
Yeah.
So that's the pretext of my organization. But I also created, the last thing I told them I would offer them, besides a lot of the stuff that I have done for the organization, I created a sport called Moto Touring. And we have national championships in every nation, and we have a world championship every year. And it's doing really, really well. Now, you may think, wow, how the hell did you create that? Or how? And it's done really well. Well, I just told you, Mr. Lyle Schwartz, I remember when he started powerlifting as a sport. And those guys created the World Powerlifting Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only a couple of nations, mostly the U.S. and a couple of nations.
Yeah.
And it grew into a world organization. So I decided that I'd use my knowledge in motorcycling and do the same thing, but on a different sport. And that's what I've done.
Hmm.
So a lot of the stuff that you learn from one sport, you can add to another and do well.
Yeah. And that's still going today then, Mario, your motorcycle club.
Oh, no, it's going more than ever. But long after I'm dead, the organization will be there with the grandchildren because a lot of people have taken to it. They really love it. And I have people in Egypt. I have people in Nigeria, Africa. I have people in Asia. I have people in Europe. I have people from Canada all the way to the tip of South America and every nation. And the incredible thing is that this is a working class club that we started in Chicago. But the amount of engineers, architects, lawyers, and professionals and business people that have joined is incredible.
Wow. And okay.
Simply because of the ideals of the organization. In fact, today a lady wrote to me and she says, you know, I want to thank you for creating Llama, because she was telling me happy birthday. She says, I want to thank you for creating Llama. If it wasn't for the ideals that you guys have, I would have never joined.
Yeah.
Because we also treat women as our equal, something that a lot of clubs did not do.
Right, right.
They did not. In America, most of the motorcycle clubs back then, the women would wear a property of patch. And we don't. We wear a logo and our women wear the same logo. Our women are not property. And so in the world championships, we have clubs, championship, female championship, and male championships. And they're all good. They are all super good.
Wow.
So it's something that I wanted to leave after when I'm long gone from here that people can enjoy. And I still get a lot of people. I have friends that I trained years ago. One owns a gym in Quito, Ecuador, another one in Guatemala. And every so often they write to me and say hello. And I had a female that I trained whose son was growing up when she was in the gym. And he became a football player. One day she writes to me about 4 years ago. Oh, my son, I trained him myself the way you trained us with weights. And he became a great football player at the university.
Wow.
So, you know, I have a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, yeah. And I see you're traveling all over the place. I see you on Facebook. You're all over the world.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, as I said, I still believe in getting in shape. When I go on a super long ride, I get in some kind of shape, whether it's running or whatever. I do something because I'll end up in the elements. You know, you're in the rain. I've ridden in snow. Yeah. I got caught up in a snowstorm, blah, blah, blah. So you actually have to be in shape. But I've always ridden on the weekends. And in 2012, after I retired, I decided that I would do my goal was to ride throughout the whole Americas.
Hmm.
So I took off on my bike and I rode my bike for 22 and a half months on a Harley Davidson Fat Boy.
Wow.
And I visited every nation in Latin America from the U.S. all the way down to the tip of Argentina. I rode all the way to the Antarctic Argentina. In the middle of summer, I got caught in a snowstorm.
Wow.
I met a lot of people. So many people that have met me have joined the organization. When I left here, we had already 114 chapters. When I returned, we had 165.
Wow, amazing.
And they're really committed to the essence of what the organization is about loving your fellow man.
Yeah.
And they're all good riders. I rode the whole Andes Mountains from when they started in Venezuela to the tip of Chile and the tip of Argentina.
Jeez.
So I still have all those people as friends.
Wow, amazing.
I've ridden the desert in Peru 8 times.
No kidding. Wow.
I've ridden the Sahara Desert 4 times. I rode the Alps in Switzerland and in Germany.
Really? So you've been in Europe and everything? Yeah.
Love mountains. I love the Smoky Mountains and the Blue Ridge Parkway here in the Americas. There's a lot to see here, you know. Hopefully this November, after about the 20th, I'm taking off and I'm going to meet with some guys in a chapter I started in Arizona, but I'm also going there to shoot some videos and pictures of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because part of what I do and our chapters do, all our clubs do, we promote tourism in our respective nations. That's our volunteer job as a patriot for our nations, is to promote tourism. Why? Because you know that the U.S. and Europe have a lot of money. They spend a lot of money promoting tourism, and rightfully so. But poor countries like Bolivia and Paraguay and Ecuador, they don't have that kind of money. But our members can go, and when they go to a tourist attraction or a beautiful mountain or some beautiful scenic area, they can put it on my page, and my page is seen by over 35 nations.
Hmm.
All the way from India, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Dubai. People look at my page everywhere, and they also put their own pictures on there.
Are you talking about your Facebook page, or do you have another one with Facebook
page? Well, I have 7 Facebook pages.
Okay, okay.
But my Mario Nieves one has a lot. But I have others because I manage them for different reasons, and they all have some pictures from wherever it's at. Wherever members are, they put their pictures. But on my Mario Nieves page, we have over 35 nations that constantly scan it and look at pictures because we share and they believe in the same thing we do. You don't have to be in our organization to help your country promote tourism.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the first time I think I met you, Mario, or not met you, but the first time I saw you, you were guest posing at a show called the Mr. Ford City, which was a shopping center in the south side of Chicago. I think I was like maybe 13 years old, and me and my dad were walking through there, and they had these risers set up, and Ernie Franz was deadlifting. He was giving like a deadlifting exhibition. And then you were the guest poser, and I think Glenn Kinnear won the show. So that I think that had to be 76 or 77.
Probably 76. I'll tell you. You named two really fabulous people. Ernie Franz, I had a tremendous amount of respect for. He was not only the national powerlifting champion, but he was great in bodybuilding. My God, he had an incredible body.
Yeah.
What he did not do is, because he competed in powerlifting, he would compete in powerlifting and just walk into the bodybuilding. Even then, he placed third in the Mr. USA.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I was really astounded by how good he really looked. I said, man, if he really got in shape and concentrated. But he couldn't because he was a powerlifting champion. And that was first. So let's see. Ernie, thank you, dear. Thank you. I get good service here.
Yeah, that's great.
And so Ernie was a fabulous, really nice guy. He was a real nice guy. I always liked him. Always humble, respectful, a real great representative of our sport. And then Glenn Kinnear was a young boy, and I always liked him. Real good kid.
Yeah.
Really good kid. And he did well in bodybuilding. I don't know where he's at now, but I'm sure he's in Facebook somewhere.
Yeah.
But I liked him. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I just hooked up with Glenn last year. I went back to Chicago. He's in Chicago, one of the suburbs. And we did an interview on this show on the Bodybuilding Legends, and he talked a lot about you also. Yeah.
Now, where are you at?
I'm in Tampa, Florida now.
Ah, okay, okay.
Yeah.
We have a great chapter in Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there in 2019. We held the World Championships in Tampa.
Yep. Okay, all right, yeah.
It's a beautiful place to live.
Yeah, it's beautiful out here. I love it. I've been here 10 years already, so.
Yeah, right now it's getting ugly here.
Yeah.
And I'm here with my sister. I'm not going to live here anymore. I love Chicago, the Chicagoland area. I'm in Belvedere, but I really want to move to either Texas or Florida, which is beautiful. But if not, I'm going to move back to Puerto Rico or somewhere in a warm country because I'm at home almost anywhere.
Yeah.
I can live in Nicaragua. I can live in Mexico. I just don't want to be involved in crime or anything like that. I want to live in peace.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Well, before I let you go, Mario, I want to talk about your movie career. Because you starred in some movies in the 80s with some of the big action stars like Chuck Norris and Steven Seagal. So how did that all come about? How did you get into the movies?
Well, I'm not a movie star. I don't consider myself an actor. I was an action figure. I enjoyed myself. Mm-hmm. I was one of the finishing touches on a life that I wanted to also do, but I wasn't intended to be an actor. I ran a little bodybuilding show in Humboldt Park. Remember, I've always been real close to my community. I've always tried to do something in my community. And so Humboldt Park was never used for anything. You couldn't have any events in Humboldt Park because they swore there'll be shootings, killings, and murders, and it was true.
Wow.
And you couldn't do that. So in 1982, I decided to do a custom bike show, but they turned me down and given me a permit. But the guy that ran the park was Bobby Carrillo. He was one of the top boxers in the world, and he was like my contemporary in boxing, that we knew each other. So I went to see him in person. I said, Bobby, I went to downtown get a permission to do this custom bike show, and they turned me down. I knew they would. Forget it. But I'll tell you what. If you can promise me that you're not going to have any problems there, if you can promise there won't be a fight or anything, I will personally give you a handwritten permission where the police come, you give them that permission, and you'll be okay. But I'm going to tell you this. If your guys screw up, I'll be fired. Now imagine a guy taking a risk like that. That's how much he respected me.
Yeah.
I got 87 people that are going to be guard. Each one of my members is guard. We're not going to have any problems there. And we have the neighborhood under control. So I ran the show, and the park got full of people. There wasn't an argument there. The police came. They hung out and make sure that everything was okay. Nothing happened. So I did that for 2 years. And then the third year, a group from the neighborhood came to see me and said, man, we saw your bike show. We've seen how successful you've done. A lot of people come. There's no problems. We have an idea of running a festival, but we thought we'd come and ask you what you thought. I said, you know what? Man, that's the greatest thing you can do. Our community doesn't have anything for the children, for the people. That's why there's so many gangs. There's no outlets for anybody to do anything.
Yeah.
I did a bike show. The artists need to do an art show. The dancers need to do a dance show. I said, and if you decide that you will do that, and I told them more or less how to do it, and if they needed help, we would also help them with keeping an eye on everything without having to pay us. And the first 2 years, we did help. But I also told them, and I will do this. I will run a bodybuilding contest on your stage. And I did. And I did. So when I ran the bodybuilding contest, one of the kids that came in placed like sixth. He was a model. He was a model. He says, "Mine, Mar, thank you. I thought it was really nice. I know I didn't win, but you know what? It's just such an honor to be here. And I love the way that you do it, that you did this." So he had an agent. And the agent told him about 2 months later, "Look, we're looking for a guy to play a thug. We need a real thug-looking guy. And we need a guy that looks tough." So he said, "Well, look, I know a guy who may be what you're looking for. He rides a motorcycle." And the agent came and found me on the street on my motorcycle.
Really?
Yeah. So they talked to me. I said, "Well, you know, I can go to the audition with no problem at all. But I'll tell you this. I'm getting ready for the Mr. America in California. As long as it does not crash with that, I will do the audition. But if it does, I'll tell you that I cannot go."
Right.
Well, they call me. I'm leaving Friday for the Mr. America or Thursday, and they call me that Friday was the audition. I said, "I'm sorry, I won't be able to go."
Right.
So I go to the Mr. America, and that's when I learned my big lesson about natural bodybuilding. I didn't even make the top 10, and I was really prepared. As best as I could, I looked like nothing compared to them.
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself, man, I didn't even place, and I should have just stayed in Chicago and done the audition, but I know that this is where my heart is. Didn't matter. You weren't going to change me. No matter what place I took, I was going to be there. So about a month later, they called me and say, Mario, would you still be interested in doing that audition? I said, why? Is it available? Yes, we have not found the person we're looking for.
Hmm.
So I go, I do the audition, and there's a few actors there that are pretty good. And I had seen them before. Anyway, I got the part.
Hmm.
So I played a thug in Chuck Norris's film. And to be honest, it's not easy if you're not an actor, because it was the opposite of who I really am. We had run after a girl, abuse her and stuff. And it was funny. I had to put it in my head. Well, it's great to act because you can act a way that you would never be.
Right.
But it was anti who I am. But we did it. And it turned out to be one of his best films. It's called Code of Silence.
Code of Silence,
and then through that, I did a small part in a movie with Steven Seagal, Above the Law. I did a small part with Tom Cruise and Paul Newman in Color of Money. I did another small part here and another small part there. And then I started doing some commercials. I did a commercial for John Deere as a caveman that paid me some really good money. I did a few commercials, and then little by little, I just kept on with what I was doing with the gym and the motorcycle group, and I kind of let that fade away. I could not leave to go to California chasing dreams because, let's face it, I know that Don Johnson and some of these guys, they used to wait on tables in restaurants because they needed to be able to leave anytime they want for an audition.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they were low class. It's that if you're going to be an actor, you have to be working in a set that allows you to leave at 1 o'clock or 5 o'clock for an audition. Right. I worked in construction. I made a lot of money. I could not leave just like that or I'd lose my job. And I could not turn it down because I had a family. So I had to continue to work. So little by little, we faded out of that. But you know what? Meeting Chuck Norris is one of the best things I did. I never really can't say that I cared for him much. But when I met him in person, he's a hell of a guy.
Really?
It's good to meet people in person because then you get to see he is a really down-to-earth person.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you what he was like, what him and Steven Seagal were like when you got to meet him.
Well, I think that Chuck Norris is the kind of guy that I could work in a production line right next to him or work on a farm, on a tractor. He's that kind of guy. He's a real down-to-earth guy.
Yeah.
I like Steven Seagal, but Steven Seagal was a little bit of the showboat kind of guy.
Okay.
But not, I don't mean that in a bad way because he was nice too, but he was a little bit of a showboat and a little different. And so I ended up liking them both, but I prefer Chuck Norris is down to earth. Chuck Norris' brother, on the other hand, was different. He was got involved in heavy drugs.
Oh, and really?
They put him in a program right after that movie.
Hmm. Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that. Did you have fight scenes with those guys?
Yes.
Okay.
I got beat up.
Yeah, of course.
More than one time. It was worth it. It was worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
More than one time. But you know what? Chuck Norris and Steven Seagal are good martial artists to begin with.
Yeah.
I wasn't in martial arts back then, but I would have loved martial arts because it's really something along my lines. But at this age, it's too late to be any good in anything, but you can always enjoy doing them, you know, going through the motions and doing the sport.
Yeah.
It's never too late. But I really had my mindset. Bodybuilding was my passion. It was what I loved the most in the world. And it took a skinny kid from a ghetto and turned me into a bionic man.
Yeah.
It's the only way I can tell you that. Someone may hear me and say, oh, he's bragging, he's wrong. No. You took a skinny kid, poor and raggedy, and by the time he was 19 years old, he was bionic. I could run forever. I could jump high. I could play basketball all day. Bodybuilding was just something that I had a passion for.
Yeah, I'm the same way, Mario. I still love it. I agree with you. I think it's the best thing you could do. But I know you've got some thoughts about bodybuilding today, you know, because I know I posted some stuff on Facebook and you made some comments. And so what do you think about how the sport, because you were around during, like you said, the Renaissance, the 60s, 70s. How do you think it's progressed or gone forward up into 2020?
Well, when I was training, like I said, we were real poor kids in a gym, in a YMCA gym, and there was no drugs there. I shouldn't say that because it could have been. If there was, it was probably cocaine or marijuana or something, but steroids were not a big deal there, so if somebody used them, they must have hit them. It just wasn't prevalent. You didn't know. But we were busting our butts training and stuff. And then when I opened my gym, there was a big war, a drug revolution in the late 80s.
Yeah.
84, 85, yeah, in the early 80s. And from the time I left bodybuilding in 79 to the time I opened the gym in 82, by 83, anybody that came to my gym was looking for drugs. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, that's incredible. I can't believe this. All the other years that I trained, there was no such thing. Yeah. Nobody even discussed it. Now people will come to you got drugs, you got this, you got what do you do for this, what do you do for that? And so I was flabbergasted at that. In our gym back then, we also didn't have drugs. I'm sure that later on we got a few guys, but most of the guys I trained were also natural. I trained a lot of natural guys. And the problem with that is that when you're doing it, you think you're doing a great job. But now I look back and say, I probably did them an injustice because if they'd have took drugs, it probably would have been much better. But not one guy can say that Mario trained him and he's sick or dead.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing. What created the real, I know there probably were drugs that we didn't know about. It wasn't in the open. But Joe Weider started writing articles in Muscle Builder about drugs. That had the most incredible impact on every single person who wanted to use drugs.
Mm.
You almost had to be an anti-drug person not to want to use them.
Yeah.
You know? And so that changed bodybuilding forever to the point where left bodybuilding completely, probably in the 90s, because I competed once or twice in a year just for fun. By the time 2000 came, a lot of the guys that I competed against, I would ask somebody, what about so-and-so? Oh, man, he's on a kidney machine. What about so-and-so? He's got a messed up liver. These are not dead people. These were people that were sick.
Right.
But I remember when I went on my long trip, I was on my bike 22 and a half months. I left here July the 4th, 2012. I was on my way back in 2014, May. I crossed Texas. There had been a girl, a black woman, that placed third, I think, in a big bodybuilding contest. I don't remember if it was USA or World. But I know that as I was crossing Texas, she died.
Hmm.
And I said, oh, my God, she just died. And she was just competing a week or two ago.
What year was this?
I realized, see, this is what I did not want myself or my kids to be involved in, because obviously anything that we do good, like I did with my brothers, I got them involved in powerlifting and bodybuilding and all that. You know, you love it. But now when you're starting to look at things that are very bad for you, would you get your son involved in bodybuilding if he's going to end up on drugs and that? And yeah. So I have to look at it from that perspective. I love bodybuilding. I'm not here to criticize anybody, but I tell everybody, please remember, someday you're going to be 50. Forget 70. You're going to be 50. Do you want to be alive at 50? Do you want to live a good life? And people sometimes, when I left here on my long trip through the Americas, I've done it twice already. I got interviewed by television stations in every nation. It was incredible. And they would tell me, man, you look, I was 60 then. They go, man, I can't believe you're 60. Look at how strong you look and you're healthy. And it not only does it sound good, it feels good. It feels good to be healthy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're so right, because I mean, we just had Bill Pearl celebrate his 90th birthday, and we look at some of these old champions and
I love Bill Pearl.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. He's such a great guy. But I mean,
Bill Pearl would have came up 10 years ago, he wouldn't be alive. If he would have been involved in the chemical warfare that bodybuilders are involved in now, he would be dead. But instead, he's alive. Maybe someone else will look at him and say, he's an old man and who cares? Well, when you're alive, you care, because I remember one time somebody saw Muhammad Ali and came running to work. Oh, man, I saw Muhammad Ali. He looks screwed up. He's terrible. I said, wow, that's a disrespect to a man that was a world champion. Everything has a price.
Yeah.
You know, how can you say that somebody's no good because now they're an older man? We're all going to get old.
Right, you know? Right.
I had a tremendous admiration for Bill Pearl and also his powerful physique. He not only had a physique, he always looked powerful.
Yeah.
He was a gentleman.
Always a gentleman.
Never met him in person.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but you're so right. I mean, bodybuilding is like the greatest sport because, I mean, it really contributes to your health. You know, you look great. It's a challenge. It helps you with your mind. And when it's done correctly, I think I agree with you. I think it's the greatest thing ever. Problem is that it's not done correctly anymore, you know.
That's true. And bodybuilding, I say that bodybuilding can make and improve any sport.
Yeah,
I proved absolutely. And many, many people have proved that after me. Lou Ferrigno, many others have proved that after me, but I proved it initially here in the Illinois area. If you're a high jumper, I'll put you on squats, and believe me, you will jump higher.
Yeah.
What training with weights will do, it will increase your potential. So if your body, with the best training that I can give you in running, can run a mile in 3:57, I'll train you with weights and running, and I guarantee you're running in 350.
Right.
You know, it's a way to improve the potential that you have, and nothing else can improve potential.
Right.
A guy can jump 7 feet at the maximum. That's all he's done. Everything he's trained every way he can. 7 feet. Put him on the squat rack and let him keep jumping. He will jump over 7 feet.
Right. Yeah.
It can make you bionic. It can improve every single sport from golf all the way down if done correctly.
Yeah. That's why it's amazing that your wrestling coach changed everything and started training his athletes with weights. I got involved in bodybuilding in 77. And even then, all the myths were persisting. You know, everybody's telling me you're going to be muscle bound. It's all going to turn to fat when you get older. And this was in 77. So that was over 10 years early.
Well, I went to Orr High School. I had a 28-0 record in wrestling.
Really? Wow.
My teammate, Mike Muley, was better than me. He also had a 28-0 record. We had a hell of a team, but I think what made them stand out is that I had just walked in my junior year and senior year, where as all the other guys had wrestled in grammar school and all that, I was like a latecomer. Here I was doing really good.
Wow. All right, Mario. Well, listen, I want to thank you for joining me for a great interview. It was really great talking to you. Like I said, I've always looked up to you ever since I was a kid. So it was great finally getting to sit down and talk to you. And happy birthday. Thanks for joining me on your birthday. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. Once again, it's an honor to be here with you and to know that you guys are enjoying my sport, because bodybuilding was always my favorite sport, and I'd love to see more people in it. I have never, ever regretted, and that's one thing I have always told people, I have never, ever regretted ever bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Never.
Right.
Everything I did was really best for me. It made me a good athlete, and I've never regretted it, so it's an honor to be here with you. I wish you the best of luck. Keep that positive attitude. There's nothing better that you can do in life than bodybuilding for health.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. If you're ever in Tampa, stop and look me up, and we'll get together and have lunch or something.
Will do. Thank you. Thank you very much. Will do.
All right,
ciao.
Buddy. All right. Take care, Mario. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Mario Nieves for a great interview. And hopefully we will have Dan Solomon on next week, where we can talk about the Mr. Olympia. Thank you to Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to all our Patreon donors who generously support our show each month with their donations. And as I said, if you want to be a Patreon donor yourself, you can just go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, which is the official website of the podcast. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for the Patreon donors. And that is it, guys. Stay safe. I will not be training, but I hope your training is going well. Stay healthy, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.